How do we do an intro when you're starting a podcast? I mean, it's completely new. All right. Well, anyways, this is Cautious Coffee, episode one, and my name's Austin Staton. We've got D-Ray Crane joining us as the co-host. And D-Ray, what is Cautious Coffee? Why are we launching a podcast in 2021 when it seems that everyone else has a podcast already?
You know what? I've been thinking that. Myself, that there are enough podcasts and there's enough noise out there, but where we started with Cautious Coffee was at work, working together
in 2020
during the pandemic, and our journey started right there in the office when everyone was still going to work every day and life was much different. So our story really has like a creation story behind it. It's really cool, really genuine and authentic. And that's why we're here. We're just following that energy.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess if we want to formally introduce ourselves, my name's Austin Staton. I grew up in the Woodlands, Texas, went to school at Baylor University, work in communications, did 9 years in the oil and gas industry, and now working with an independent PR agency here in Houston. I met D-Ray, what was it? November, December, October 2019, somewhere right before the COVID-19 pandemic. And D-Ray, you've got, incredible background. Go ahead and introduce yourself.
D-Ray Crane. I am, 4 or 5 years now in Houston, Texas. And if I think about where I started in Davenport, Iowa, which is where I'm originally from, I started, boxing as a 9-year-old kid, and it kind of took me all over the place and really gave me a sense of adventure and a desire to want to go and pursue my curiosity to see how far I can take things. And it's really odd and exciting at the same time to think about where I started as a boxer, growing up as a poor black kid in Davenport, Iowa, going to school in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, where it's just a culture shock and things are a lot different up there than they are down here. And then joined the military. I joined the military and was active duty for 6 years. 6 years as a logistics officer, and the last 5, I'm still in.
You can't get out.
As a civil affairs officer, I'm doing my best to get out right now, quite honestly, so I could pursue some other things. And like Austin said, we met working in oil and gas, in communications and advocacy for the company that we worked for. And we didn't really talk a whole lot initially.
No, I mean, I think one thing that separated D-Ray from most people is whenever there's like a new person joining the team, I feel like somebody always comes around and introduces you and says, hey, this is so-and-so. Nice to meet you. You go through all those formalities. D-Ray didn't even wait for people to introduce him. He just went around introducing. And I think probably within a week or two of meeting, I was drinking like Starbucks coffee every morning, slurping my coffee. I had no idea that I even did this. I mean, no clue that I was slurping coffee. And D-Ray was like, man, I can hear you. Austin, quiet down. And I was like, I don't even realize what's going on. I love my vanilla latte in the morning. And fast forward to...
So this is before we ever even thought about Cautious Coffee.
Before. This is the origin story with the name Cautious Coffee. But, man, all right. So flash forward to the summer of 2020. And during the summer of 2020, there was a lot of chaos in America, really spawning from... the deaths of Breonna Taylor, George Floyd. And I saw something that you posted on Instagram, and it was saying how you were afraid to go outside and run in a hoodie. And knowing that you had a background in boxing and you're a very likable guy, I hated seeing that. I remember reaching out to you just on DM saying, hey man, if you ever need to talk, let me know. And I think you just like double tapped it or responded. I can't remember. And about a week later, you sent me an email that said Cautious Coffee. Yeah. And I don't know, just tell the listeners what the email said.
I was explaining to Austin because we started working from home.
Yeah.
And I started drinking coffee because I got even more busy like a lot of folks do. And the coffee's hot and I started slurping it. And I was like.
You understood.
I was like, sheesh. I was giving Austin such a hard time for slurping his coffee, being so loud in the office. And here I am. So I drafted up an email, and it was subject line was Cautious Coffee. And that's how Cautious Coffee was born.
Yeah.
And when Austin and I had met you know, he and I would talk. I'd come by his desk. He has, you know, something that said, seek discomfort on his desk. And I'm all about seeking discomfort, but in real time.
Yeah.
And I like to know that people are about that action. In the sense that, you know, what they say and how they project themselves to the world is what they actually are. So I'm going to go and poke and prod at you. I'm a troublemaker in that way, because I value authenticity, as opposed to a facade of some sort. So that's how Austin and I started talking. And then, I gave him a hard time. That's how I was able to give him a hard time about the coffee, that he was making noise.
Yeah, but it works out. But anyways, that's kind of the origin story of Cautious Coffee, where it came from. And we actually started these weekly conversations at the company that we work for. We really dove into issues that we felt impacted our country, our culture, our people. And we really didn't like how a lot of, you know, whenever there was discussion on key issues, that it was always done from the top down at the company. And you kind of felt, at least I did, that there was some sort of disconnect with, you know, some of the issues that were happening, and, you know, maybe somebody discussing one of these issues and they lived, you know, in a completely different continent. And so it's like, were they really subject matter experts? That was just my opinion. But D-Ray and I wanted to have these conversations and almost have them from the bottom up. And we felt that we could have change and maybe impact a positive work culture by having these conversations. And ultimately we decided to take this to iTunes, take it to Spotify, take it to YouTube. So this is episode one, and we're going to discuss so many different issues on this podcast and video series. We have no idea where this is going. We've kind of scripted out topics that we're going to discuss, but
very roughly.
Very roughly. It's not scripted in nature. Yeah,
not rehearsed
at all. It's not rehearsed. Who knows? It could be great. It could be terrible, but we're here. We want to have these conversations. We want people to seek empowerment, not power. And we want people to be better people, you know, have conversations. I think that's one thing that has been very difficult in our society is people are afraid to have difficult conversations.
And part of that's from just not wanting to take ownership. So Austin, Austin replied to that email that I sent him. He said, you know, I have this incredible idea. And it just grew from there.
Yeah.
And then we involved, you know, our colleagues, and we'd have a weekly webcast, and, you know, we have, you know, 30 or 40 folks on the webcast, and we were like, well, we have something here. And we're just leading from where we were, not, you know, as senior leaders necessarily, but as people, right? It's just people coming together. People-peopling is what I call it. And just having those difficult conversations to try to gain awareness and understanding. To be better people.
Yeah, and I think that's the entire objective of Cautious Coffee, is to create better people, to create people who are, you know, and to empower people to have uncomfortable conversations, to learn and grow from one another, to share experiences based as they've understood them and how they've grown up. Because D-Ray and I have grown up in completely different, you know, parts of the world. You know, I grew up in suburban Houston, and, you know, upper middle class neighborhood. Now, we weren't upper middle class by any means, but still had the access to, you know, things like education and infrastructure that, you know, some others throughout the country just don't have the opportunity to have. So we want to have these like real discussions. And if there are any topics that you want us to discuss, we encourage you to follow us on our social media platforms. Just search Cautious Coffee on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, and YouTube. And you can also visit our website, cautiouscoffee.com. And I think in a few episodes, we're going to have like a Patreon page. So if you want to, join us on Patreon and get additional benefits, you know, maybe shop some merch. I think it's patreon.com/cautiouscoffee. But D-Ray, let's go back to where it all started. And our first topic that we had when we originally did Cautious Coffee internally was on race in America. And it was after George Floyd and the whole conversation around Black Lives Matter. And I know it was a very sensitive time at our company because the company had never had Martin Luther King Day off. They had never had Juneteenth off. And here we are in 2020 during the middle of a pandemic making these changes. And I thought that it was good for at least the company to recognize it. And I really enjoyed our first conversation to hear, you know, where people were coming from, you know, because there was, it was a very difficult time because you knew that, you know, police had done something incredibly wrong, you know, murdering George Floyd. And this has been a problem that's been happening in America for far too long. But at the same time, you've got people who are violently protesting and destroying property. And so it's very challenging for people. I don't know. I felt like it polarized this country. And here we are, you know, 6-7 months after that. Oh, gosh, almost a year after that happened. And the new hashtag in America is Stop Asian Hate. And so we're still seeing this racism happening. And it's not just limited to blacks and Asians. I mean, it's happening everywhere. You know, so many different cultures have been impacted. And I mean, what's going on in America, man?
I think, you know, America, land of the free, home of the brave, we really hold it to a different standard.
Yeah.
Right? The ideals, our constitution, the opportunity that you have here in this country. So it's heartbreaking when something like the Floyd case happens. And I remember reaching out to my line manager at the time and just saying, you know, I'm really, you know, really thinking deeply about how easily it is to die as a black man in this country. And that was just, you know, came from a really genuine place. And that may be something what my Instagram post was about, you know, just kind of going along my way. And I'm more likely to leave this world than, you know, one of my white peers.
Someone like me.
Right. Yeah. So that's kind of the thing that really got me to thinking. And you know, I kind of walk the entire spectrum, right, and take a 40,000 foot view of it and understand that there is no better country on this planet than the United States.
Yeah.
All right. It doesn't.
We have our flaws.
Yep.
It
doesn't matter what color you are. I mean, if we're speaking about black people, especially, there's no better place in the world for black people to be, because black people are oppressed, you know, around the world. And, you know, we can't dig all into the statistics because those are people, not just widgets behind the statistics necessarily. But overall, you know, this is a great country, but it's still, you know, we still have work to do. That's the thing. We still have work to do, and we all have our biases, and we all have fear and uncertainties. And these things, you know, they reveal themselves through, you know, incidents like what happened with George Floyd.
I think a lot of it too is ignorance. You know, for me, I grew up in a bubble in the Woodlands, Texas. And the joke that we used to have at our high school was, you know, we had a lot of diversity. We had blondes, brunettes, occasional redhead or two. And then I moved on to Baylor University. And I think the numbers at Baylor are something like 70 to 75% white. And then the rest is, you know, a mix between, you know, black, Hispanic, Asian. So I don't think I was really exposed to race. And when I was, you know, I had, you know, a few friends who were black and, you know, the Woodlands and at Baylor, but I never had conversations about, you know, some of these struggles and issues that were happening. I felt like I was, I don't know if I was isolated by it or if I was, maybe just thinking, you know, oh, it can't happen to, you know, my friends, you know, most of these people, you know, maybe they have a criminal background or something like that. You know, maybe that was my perspective. And I never even thought to have those conversations. And, you know, we've had police violence in the U.S. for quite some time. And I think each time it's, you know, been a heated controversy for about a week or two. And then people forget about it.
Yeah.
And I think this year in 2020 was completely different. And I do wonder if maybe the pandemic had kind of built up this frustration and gave people a cause, you know, to speak out, to protest. But it was different. And, you know, after Breonna Taylor and George Floyd were killed, I started to see people that I knew from Baylor and my high school start to share their experiences, you know, similar to yours, suggesting how, you know, they've been targeted for racism or hate or just sharing stereotypes and difficulties. And I felt terrible because I never knew that some of these things were happening. And I mean, that's just kind of where my head was at. And I think it comes down to ignorance at the end of the day.
Absolutely.
I think sometimes we're afraid to ask questions because we don't want to come across as ignorant and not being a subject matter expert in something. And so we're afraid to ask these questions or learn about someone's experiences, someone's backgrounds. And I think that that's potentially what's holding our country back.
And well, we may not even, you know, there is the ignorance piece, and that's not to say that it's, you know, that's not demonizing anyone. It's just they may not know what questions to ask, right? Because there's a lack of awareness, a general lack of awareness, and it's generational. So it's hard to fault people, you know, and if unless that person really wants to, you know, kind of ascend and become greater and evolve, you know, they really have to ask themselves first those difficult questions. You know, what am I missing? What don't I know? You know, what am I not? What haven't I been exposed to? So, you know, that ignorance piece where they haven't traveled much, they haven't left their bubbles. And then, you know, like I said, it rears itself through our law enforcement, through our systems throughout this country. You know, I was watching a documentary. It's even in, you know, AI that a lot of American-based companies have, you know, they program these algorithms, and even the coding and the technology is biased. So, I mean, it's a real fundamental question that we have to ask ourselves. And as long as you're asking yourself those questions, I think you can get to a better place. And I know we had a piece on Obama talking about, how do we remedy it?
Yeah. So we do have a clip that we want to play. And this was Barack Obama in early April discussing how to cure racism. But before we get into that clip, D-Ray, I do want to ask you another question, because I feel like if you're a scientist, an engineer, if you're a communicator, if you're a social worker, if you want to improve your craft, you're always going to ask questions. You're always going to learn and grow. Why are we hesitant to learn and grow outside of our comfort zone?
I think it's just natural. It's, you know, no one else around you, your sphere of influence has a great deal of influence on you, whether you get married or you know, you want to be a husband or you want to be a spouse. Whether you go to college, you know, what kind of jobs, what kind of sports you're interested in. And if your sphere, like your family, if they aren't, you know, interested in those things, you're less likely to be interested in those things. So, you know, you wouldn't even think to ask yourself those questions. And with the pandemic, it really forced us all to slow down. Right. So it's like we had time.
Yeah.
All right. We had time to watch that clip over and over again. We had time to go out in the streets and protest. We had time to get upset. And, you know, the media plays a role in it, too, where they kept it in our face. And then you have social media. The stuff spreads like wildfire. So that's what's so wild, is that like these things like this happen all the time. But people didn't have camera phones. You know, they weren't able to get it uploaded onto a social media site.
Everyone's a journalist now.
Everyone wants the juiciest story, whether it's a street fight or a car accident. You know,
I mean, think about it in high school, right? Whenever there was a fight in your cafeteria, every single student would huddle around in that circle watching that fight. Yeah. And now it's the same thing. Whenever there's any sort of violence or anything going on, people don't want to actually step up and interact, but they want to record it. And I wonder, you know, about that with George Floyd. I mean, there had to have been other people walking around seeing that he was yelling, "I can't breathe," for 9 minutes.
Yeah, but when you see the police there, you know, these people that are supposed to be protecting and serving, and they have that air of authority. You know, you know, the normal person would probably be scared.
Yeah, to intervene. That's a fair point. Yeah, it's a fair point. So this clip right now that we're gonna play, it's a quote. It's really about a two and a half minute clip from President Barack Obama. It was recorded in April 2021 on how to cure racism, and here is his answer.
I don't think any of us have a silver bullet to deal with racism. A lot of it is hardwired, this notion of humans being afraid of those who are not like us, and you know, shifting our attitudes about tribe and outsiders, and you know, in ways that we haven't outgrown yet. But I can say in the American context, there are a couple things that are absolutely necessary. Number one, making sure that our kids know our history, right? That the inequalities that we have today, whether it's in terms of incarceration and arrest rates or the wealth gap or the education gap that exists, that these don't just spring up, but are in fact the legacy of hundreds of years of systematic discrimination against African Americans and people of color. The second thing is to make sure that all of us try to reach out, and Bruce and I talk about this a lot in the podcast, being able to reach out to people who aren't like us and doing so with an open mind and an open heart, and knowing that you have to learn about folks who are not like you, and that sometimes that may make you uncomfortable. But if you're only with people who agree with you, laugh at the same things you do, care about the same stuff you do, listen to the same music, then we're not going to learn from each other, and things aren't going to get better. And the third thing is, and this may be the trickiest thing, you know, for white folks not to feel overly defensive or embattled when there's a discussion about our legacy of racism in this society, that it's not necessarily an indictment on them personally, but rather is a description of history that they can be a part of solving. And on the part of black folks or people of color, understanding that just because somebody may not be as knowledgeable or appreciate everything that you're going through or know the history of discrimination in this country, that doesn't make them a bad person. And that you have to be willing to both correct folks when they're off, but not condemn them and suggest that just because they didn't get things exactly the way you think they should, that makes them a bad person, right? That willingness to be open to others and to give people the benefit of the doubt, I think is also part of the healing process and the reckoning process that we're going to have to go through.
I thought he made some very, very good points, especially there toward the end, on really showing people grace that don't have these conversations or don't understand. And to me, that kind of comes across as don't necessarily cancel people or use that as an opportunity to block somebody out of your life, but maybe use that as an opportunity to educate them and maybe have a conversation in a way that potentially is relatable to them. That's kind of one of the takeaways that I got, is that we need to try to have these conversations with people. But in terms of ending racism, he goes on to say how there's a lot of systematic racism built into the country. And the one thing that he mentioned that I know we've talked about, and this is probably going to be a completely different episode, was education and access to opportunity. And I think that's something that is kind of holding this country back in 2021.
Yeah, I mean, think about the education that we received.
Yeah.
The history of, you know, the world and our country, and then you have all these policymakers that you know, pass these laws and these legislation where they're biased. You know, everything they believe about, you know, quote unquote a super predator, or the implications of what it means to grow up in, you know, the Bed-Stuy projects, or, you know, what inner city people, they have these preconceived notions and they don't necessarily know any better. They may think they're doing what's best, and policymakers are focused on the here and now and not necessarily thinking about the secondary and tertiary effects of their decisions, because, you know, well, they want to get elected. They want to get reelected. So, you know, it's problematic, but I can understand. And I don't, you know, the grace piece, if I'm a black man, you know, and I want the majority population to, you know, evolve and be able to understand my struggle, you know, they have to do it quick, fast, and in a hurry. Otherwise, yeah, you know, we end up with these situations where we just keep exacerbating, you know, the condition of the black community.
So where does it start? Does it start at the home? Like, because I understand there are decades of biases that come in, but how do you have those conversations with people that are ignorant and don't see a problem, or maybe think, quote, he had it coming or something like that? Yeah. Like, how do you reach those people?
Yeah, that's those people don't usually ask why.
Right.
You know, they take what they're told and they run with it instead of asking, you know, well, why was this person, even if he was, intoxicated or inebriated, well, why was he? Let's kind of unpack everything that brought. Let's talk about George Floyd to that point where he was outside of that store that day.
Yeah.
You know, we can just look at how the system kind of put him in that spot. Whereas if he had, you know, gone to college and had a, you know, some sort of a job that was, you know, fruitful, I'm not necessarily certain about his background, but you know, he may have not found himself in that position that day. And that story probably happens time and time again throughout this country.
I mean, you look at someone like Botham Jean, who I believe worked at a Big Four accounting firm. He was returning home to his apartment, and police officer Amber Geiger from Dallas PD thought that she was walking into her apartment.
Yeah.
And I guess Botham kept his door unlocked, and she walked in, shot him, thinking that there was somebody in her house. So, I mean, even those types of situations, it can still happen. But we talk about, you know, diversity in this country, and the U.S. is a very diverse place. And it's not just like racism that's happening against blacks, but we look at, you know, the Asian hate in this country. We look at anti-Semitism that's happening in this country. And you mention lawmakers and how some of these laws are set up against, I mean, really, you're put from behind. And we look at the 117th Congress, for example. This is the most diverse Congress that we've ever had.
Yeah.
But here are the numbers. Only 23% of the U.S. House and Senate are racial or ethnic minorities. 23%.
Yeah.
Overall, 124 lawmakers today identify as Black, Hispanic, Asian Pacific Islander, or Native Americans. According to Pew Research, this represents a 97% increase over the 107th Congress of 2001 to 2003, which had 63 minority members. So that's according to Pew Research. So we've seen a lot of growth in the last 20 years, but still even 23% doesn't represent this country if you look at it as a whole.
Yeah, absolutely. You're going to, you're going to have some skewed results. Humans, part of the human condition is looking after your own interest, your best interest. And even if people are of different colors or the same color, you're going to look after your tribe.
Yeah.
You know, so if you look like me, you listen to the same things I listen to, you're interested in the same things I'm interested in, you know, we have common interests and we want to further those. So, you know, it goes a little bit deeper than racism for me, as I have thought deeply, you know, about the state of Black people on this planet. And regardless of where they are, they're typically oppressed. And, you know, your comment about the U.S. being, you know, this melting pot, that's the narrative, right? But that's statistically not necessarily the case, right? Canada's far more diverse than the United States is. But just how this country was started, if you think about how it was started, it's troubling, but we don't unwrap that. We don't unpack that, right? We don't, like, face it, and we aren't aware of it. So it's all sunshine and rainbows.
Yeah.
You know, it's Christopher Columbus came over. He has a statue somewhere or several statues. And, that narrative was played up as opposed to seeing, you know, Black people, and statues. I see in the history books, I see them hanging from trees. You know, what does that do to the millions of us?
I mean, even if you want to go a step further, you know,
Native Americans
being here for thousands of years before. So, yeah, I mean, I do think that comes down to education. It's, are we afraid to teach, you know, some of the checkered past of this country? Because we're all taught that, you know, America is this great place. And I think we agree, America overall,
amazing
place. Yeah. But that doesn't mean that we don't have flaws.
Still have work to do.
We can still progress and make this a more inclusive and better society for our kids, our grandkids. I think that's one of the goals that we have for this podcast, is to maybe encourage these conversations, you know, whether it's on education, whether it's on race, whether it's on time, finance, whatever, that we can maybe have you think a little bit more and go beyond just high level and maybe just want to engage in discourse with your friends, with your family, with us. So D-Ray, I know we're getting close to the end of time for this episode. And
we might have to come back and revisit this.
We will definitely have to come back and revisit this for a part two. But I think we want each episode to be about the time that it takes for you to finish a cup of coffee. Yeah. So that's 20 to 30 minutes, somewhere in that time frame. We might go a little bit long on occasion. But if you're doing, if you're giving like one takeaway for our listeners out there, our audience on race in America, what would you tell them on how they can be part of the solution and not part of the problem?
I think I want to take, I want to take Donald Trump's Make America Great Again and leave people with, let's make America the greatest it's ever been. That's the takeaway. And that applies to more than just race. That's everything. That's personal health. That's personal accountability and responsibility, and really looking out for one another, and stop letting fear get a vote.
Stop letting fear get a vote. I love that. Yeah. I love that. We're gonna go ahead and clip that and use that on social media. But I think for me, it's just don't be afraid to have a conversation. Reach out to people. Know that it's okay. I mean, if I wouldn't have sent a DM back to D-Ray, we probably wouldn't be sitting here today. We probably wouldn't have started Cautious Coffee. We probably wouldn't have developed a solid friendship to the point where he convinced me to jump out of an airplane. So take those risks, even if it is something that you're uncomfortable with, even if you're not a subject matter expert, that's okay. That's part of the process is to learn and to grow, is to take that first step. So just kind of keep that in mind. But I don't know. It's been fun. Episode one. We hope you liked it enough that you can stay on board with us. If you're watching on YouTube, we encourage you to hit the subscribe button, smash the like button. If you're listening on iTunes, we really, really encourage you to leave us a 5-star review. That helps us out with the algorithm. So maybe we can get on the new and noteworthy iTunes list. That would be the ideal situation. But D-Ray, if our guests, our listeners, they want to follow us, they can just search Cautious Coffee on most social media platforms. I think the only one that we're not going to be on is Twitter.
Okay.
I don't know. I think it's just too much to handle.
Maybe we will. Who knows?
At some point. But for now, you can follow us on LinkedIn, Instagram, and Facebook. And of course, go to our website, cautiouscoffee.com. But D-Ray, 32 minutes into episode one, it's been great.
Yeah. Thanks, man. This is awesome.
All right. Well, we hope you enjoyed this inaugural episode of Cautious Coffee. Cautious Coffee. See, we do have flaws. We this is unedited, uncut. It's raw.
I'm here for it, though.
Yeah. Let us know how we did. If there's anything that you want us to discuss, or if you have any feedback to some of our commentary, definitely hit us up on social media. But until next time, this is D-Ray Crane. I'm Austin Staton. We'll see you soon.